Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today we're going to look about the state of emergency declared in Spain in the early months of 1934. If you cast your mind back to some of the podcasts we've recently done on Spain in the prelude to the Spanish Civil War, what you'll remember is in late 1933, a right-wing government sweeps to power in the Spanish Republic, led by SEDA, the proto-fascist nationalist Catholic movement, led by Guillermo Robles, and the crisis for the Republic is that here is a notionally, legitimately elected government that seeks to destroy the very principles that the Republic was founded on. Obviously, kind of analogous to Nazism, which is which has swept to power at the beginnings of 1933, but with the same principle of using electoral means to overturn democracy and the possibility of socialism developing in that country. Now, last time, as we saw, the right, the forces of the right, the parties of the right, become ever more punitive towards the campesinos, the Spanish peasants, who had begun to become beneficiaries of land reform, very minor beneficiaries of land reform. Under the new republic, it was the intention of the landowners, the latifundi, to sweep away any of the gains made by the peasantry, and particularly to wage their own social war on the peasant unions in the countryside. The idea of there being organised peasant labour was an existential threat to the fascistic landowning class, and also to the Catholic Church itself. So the entire establishment of Spain was lined up against the changes that the Republic had made. Hence, when the right seizes power in 1933, the first victims are the poor. This pushes the forces of the left, the unions, the socialist parties, into crisis. Some believe that there are opportunities to resist, others do not. And the establishment of a state of emergency in the Spanish Republic was in part due to the failings and the kind of uncertain leadership of Largo Caballero, who was the leader of the Socialist Party, the PSOE. And today what we're going to do is we're going to be looking at Paul Preston's brilliant work, The Spanish Holocaust, that will explain this crisis further. So here, Paul Preston explains the onslaught against the poor and against the peasantry. He says, in late December 1933, a draft law had already been presented to the Cortes for the expulsion of peasants who had occupied land in the Extremadura of the previous year, the Cortes being the parliament. In January 1934, the law of municipal boundaries was provisionally repealed. The CEDA also presented projects for the emasculation of the 1932 agrarian reform by reducing the amount of land subject to expropriation and for the return of land confiscated from those involved in the August 1932 military rising. Clashes between the civil guard and the bracheros increased daily. So there was a war, in essence, waged against the poor to reclaim land that was lost during the overthrow of the monarchy and the establishment of the Republic. The left viewed the Republic as being under threat, which indeed it was. And by January, or by the end of January anyway, the indecision on the left was starting to break through into a call for action. The PSOE, the Socialist Party, and the UGT, which was the General Workers Union, the largest trade union in Spain, both began to abandon the more cautious line that Caballero had advocated. The leadership of the UGT actually passes to Caballero, and it is the younger members of the party who managed to bring Caballero over to more strident rhetoric. He then begins to embrace more explicitly revolutionary terms, though his critics suggest he is rather late to the party. And the Federación de Juventudes Socialistas, the youth movement, the socialist youth movement, along with the PSOE and the UGT, began to receive revolutionary instructions from the leadership of the PSOE. And their organisations across Spain received a series of instructions, 73 instructions, which ordered them to create militias, acquire firearms, to establish links with sympathetic members of the army and the civil guard, and to organise technicians, engineers, electricians, civil engineers, the kinds of people who could make transport, sewerage, telecommunication systems work, who would be in charge of running basic services when the state obviously would withdraw those or crack down in some way. Very little practical activity is undertaken. There is a lot of rhetoric, a lot of talk, but not a great deal of doing. And much of the rhetoric is highly naive in nature and absurdly over-optimistic. Revolutions only seem to have succeeded in the 20th century when the state is fundamentally compromised or kind of about to collapse, such as in 1917 in Russia, for example. The problem, of course, is that none of these communications were particularly secretive, and most found their way into the establishment right-wing press in Spain that added more fuel to the argument that dangerous Bolsheviks were about to take over. Paul Preston writes, "The raucous radicalism of the younger socialists would be used throughout the spring and summer of 1934 to justify harsh repression of strikes that were far from revolutionary in intent. The anything but secret plan was for the revolutionary movement to be launched in the event of the CEDA being invited to participate in government." At this point, CEDA was merely a kind of a pressure on government, having a large number of seats in the Cortes. Paul Preston continues, "There was no link between the vaguely discussed revolutionary moment and the needs and activities of the workers' movement. Indeed, no thought was given to ways of harnessing the energies of organised labour for the projected revolution. Rather, The trade unionist habits of a lifetime saw Largo Caballero persuade the new UGT executive on the 3rd of February to do nothing to stop any conventional strike action, which was then treated by the authorities as subversive. So one of the key areas where there were significant consequences of Caballero's move to the left, but his kind of ambiguous and confused move to the left, was the fate of the rural workers, the rural proletariat. When the National Committee of the Land Workers' Union, the Fédération Nationale des Travailleurs de la Terre, met on the 30th of January 1934, the moderate executive committee stepped down, and it was replaced by younger radicals led by Ricardo Zabalja Elgora here from Navarre. Elgora had moved to Argentina to escape the grinding poverty of rural Spain, and whilst there had become a trade unionist because of the terrible treatment of workers in Argentina, and had returned to Spain in 1929. He'd also worked as a school teacher and was a prolific figure, activist figure on the left, and had become a member of the UGT. And in 1932, he'd moved to Pamplona, where he had established a local trade union branch. And the right in Navarre, in Pamplona, was one of the most repressive in the country. The right-wing government of Navarre ignored most of the progressive politics of the new republic before 1933, of course, and ignored any measures to alleviate the poverty of the peasants. So Elgora had been a kind of a combative figure already before the decision to make him the head of the FNTT in Navarre. So what Elgora represented was this new generation of radical activists coming into peasant union activism in the countryside, proper kind of class warriors, if you will, who saw things in explicitly class terms and saw Spain in explicitly class struggle terms. These were the sorts of people that hadn't quite existed on the front line of Spanish peasant politics before. And the way in which the parties of the right and the new right-wing government viewed people like Elgora were evidence that a crackdown was necessary. And also because the government was dependent on CEDA votes, CEDA really is the landlord's party, and CEDA was going to make sure that its people were represented. And the key struggle in Spain is, in the eyes of CEDA, between the landlords and the peasants. And so there needed to be a war waged against the peasants to put them back in their place. The likes of Elgora began to advocate a national general strike. Older figures within the UGT particularly saw that this was, or believed this was, a kind of a rash and impulsive demand and were opposed to it. And so again, once again, you have this schism through the left.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right-wing movements throughout the 20th century have always been helped by indecision and division in the left. Juntas and military strongmen throughout the century have always been able to bank on this as a distinct possibility. And the appointment of a new Minister of the Interior, Rafael Salazar Alonso, signalled to the left that any measures that they took would meet with kind of fierce resistance. And Paul Preston writes, Salazar Alonso hastened to convene those of his subordinates responsible for public order and outline his anti-revolutionary plans. The head of the civil guard was Brigadier General Cecilio Bedia de la Caballera. In charge of the police and the assault guards was the Director General of Security, Captain José Valvidia García Barón, a crony of Alejandro Leroux, a well-known fascist, and a man of strong reactionary instincts. Valdivia assured Salazar Alonso that they could rely implicitly on the head of the assault guards, the hardline Africanista Lieutenant Colonel Agustin Munoz Grandes, a man who would rise to be vice president in Franco's government. Valdivia reported equally favourably on the civil guard captain Vicente Santiago Hudson, a fiercely anti-leftist head of the intelligence service founded by General Mola, and a colleague of the sinister Julian Mauricio Carlavilla. To have such reactionary individuals at his command well suited Salazar Alonso's repressive ambitions. Salazar Alonso made it clear to a delighted General Bedia de Caballera that the civil guard need not be inhibited in its interventions in social conflicts. It was hardly surprising that when a series of strikes by individual unions took place in the spring of 1934, Salazar Alonso seized the excuse for a heavy-handed action. One after another, in the printing, construction and metallurgical industries, the strikes led at best to stalemate and often to ignominious defeat. So, here is the moment at which the right truly goes on the offensive in 1934, during the spring. And what can we learn from Salazar Alonso's group or his inner circle? You have people who are notionally civil servants or members of the armed forces sworn to the protection of the Republic, sworn to uphold the Republic, but the reality, of course, is that these people are politically and ideologically aware of their class position and aware of their loyalties, and they are ideologically committed anti-communists and anti-socialists. And they are drawn from an entire anti-socialist culture in Spain that, as we've talked about before, revolves around the landowners and the Catholic Church. Catholicism and anti-socialism in Spain have become a very close relationship. So on March the 7th, Salazar Alonso declared a state of emergency, and he closed down the headquarters of the Socialist Youth, the Communist Party, and the anarcho-syndicalist union, the CNT. This was cheered by the head of the leader of CIDA, Gil Robles, and he declared that as long as the Minister of the Interior, Salazar Alonso, defended the social order as it existed and strengthened the idea of authority, then the government would always have CIDA support. In the El Debate newspaper, a series of articles spelt out what this meant. It meant that there would have to be strong measures against what was described as subversion on the part of the workers, or strike action, that really means. And these were normally workers protesting wage cuts. When the newspapers that were loyal to CIDA demanded the end to the right to strike altogether, the government responded with a statement that any strike that seemed to have political implications would be ruthlessly crushed, which really are all strikes. All strikes are inherently political. The newspapers on the political right assumed that all strikes were political, as did Salazar Alonso. On March 22nd, for example, El Debate denounced a strike action by waiters in Seville and by transport workers in Valencia, and claimed that they were strikes against Spain itself. The government dramatically expanded the civil guard and the assault guard, who were the kind of the shock troops of the civil guard, and they reinstated the death penalty, which had been abolished in 1932. However, there is a kind of a schism in fascist thinking as well. For those on the extreme right, the idea of the repression of the working class without war, it rather misses the point. The whole point, as far as the fascist parties in Spain were concerned, was that war should be, or civil war, or some kind of violent, bloody civil conflict, should actually be not just the means of repression, but the end in itself. The ability to keep the workers in place without conflict was kind of a mistake, as conflict has a value of its own. For example, Onésimo Redondo, who was one of the co-creators of the Junta de Ofensiva Nacional Sindicalista, which would later become part of the fascist Falange movement, said that there had been, this was a huge error. In January 1934, he wrote, "Get your weapons ready. Learn to love the metallic clunk of the pistol. Caress your dagger. Never be parted from your vengeful cudgel. The young should be trained in physical struggle, must love violence as a way of life, must arm themselves with whatever they can, and finish off by any means the feuders and Marxist swindlers who don't let us live." The organisation that later joined with the party, Falange Española, which had been created by Primo de Rivera, whom we've spoken about previously, the organisation was funded by the monarchist right, the old vested interest groups, who had been dispossessed by the establishment of the Republic. It was seen by many of the monarchists who were still, at large in Spain and still kind of present, that the an organisation like the Falange, a street-fighting fascist movement, would easily destabilise the Republic, and the return of the monarchy was ultimately likely to be facilitated by this. They were asked if they owned a bicycle. Well, bicycle was really code for a firearm, pistol. And they were armed with a cudgel or a club when they joined. And the point about the Falange is that it was able to thrive under the state of emergency created by Salazar Alonso. And it was able to thrive in a culture in which the parties of the right, organs of the state, and the old monarchist groups and parties organised together and collaborated together in order to undo any gains, normally using violence, that the peasants and the workers might have made as a result of the Spanish Republic. The Falange movement was trained by the veteran Africanista colonel, Africanista meaning the Spanish army officers who trained and led the Moroccan Berber army units in Spanish Morocco. Yes, the veteran Africanista, Lieutenant Colonel Ricardo Dorada, and the members of the Spanish intelligence services were also involved in helping the Falange. And there were significant figures from inside the Spanish Republic that were dedicated to waging this kind of conspiratorial action against the Republic itself. The Falange's commitment to violence was articulated in an early speech as, "If our aims have to be achieved by violence, let us not hold back before violence. The dialectic is all very well as a first instrument of communication, but the only dialectic admissible when justice or the fatherland is offended is the dialectic of fists and pistols." Now, as we've seen in the last few podcasts about Spain, the gradual drift towards violence, the constitutional constraints that kept sort of firewalls between violence and politics are gradually stripped away. But it's the Falange party that really leads the march towards ever greater levels of political extremism and assassination. And it will be, as we'll see in the coming episodes on this topic, the Falange party that would take the lead in dragging Spain rightwards and dragging Spain towards political violence. Anyway, I hope you've found this useful and interesting, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.